Yes, hello. Operator, go ahead.
Welcome to the President's Management Advisory Board meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you would like to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And now I'd like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Scott Winslow.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome, and thank you, everyone, for joining me for the President's Management Advisory Board meeting today on February 22nd. I am the Executive Director and Designated Federal Officer for this group, and I wanted to both set the stage and take care of a couple of housekeeping items that we do need to run through before we get started. As the operator said, this is a public meeting, so the public has been invited to listen in to the conversation that we'll be having this morning. And as this is a teleconference and we are not all in the same room, I wanted to make sure that we had a chance to understand who is actually on the line. So if I could quickly take the role for the folks who are part of the President's Management Advisory Board, if you could just say that you're here, I'd appreciate it. Ron Williams?
Here.
Jeff Kindler?
Here.
Sam Gilliland?
Here.
Enrique Salem?
Here.
Liz Smith?
Here.
Deborah Lee?
Here.
We also have the chair of the President's Management Advisory Board, Jeff Zients.
Hi, everybody.
I also wanted to very quickly let you know the individuals that we have from the government side who are also joining us. We have Joe Jordan, who all of you I know have met in the past. Danny Werfel is with us. We have Dan Tangerlini. We also have Steve Van Roekel, and we're joined by Todd Park. Each of them will have a little bit of time to talk with you across the course of this morning. With all of that, let me turn the podium over
to Scott.
Yes.
It's Gail McGovern. You didn't call my name. I'm here, too.
My apologies, Gail. I thought you hadn't joined us yet.
No problem.
There are two others who will be joining us this morning. At least they've mentioned that they would be signing in, and let me just make sure that they are not yet present. That would be Tim Sulso and Shantanu Narayan. Okay. If they do join us, they will be put into the call.
Okay. Hey, it's Jeff. Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining. We were going to do this in person, but given the travel schedules and that logistical exercise, we decided to do a phone call instead to make sure we were maximizing participation. We do want to get on everyone's calendar for an in-person meeting in the early spring, and I would love to also couple that with a social event like we've done before. Most all of you are staying on the board. A couple of folks need to cycle off, but I'm hoping that we can get everybody together for that last time as we enter the next cycle of work. We'll also be reaching out to you to identify a few new candidates to add to the board, so we'd love to get recommendations from all of you and other channels to add to the board. We're going to take a lot of material and run very quickly. In fact, I want to condense the calendar even more and be done with this meeting by 11:45 or so, and then have our administrative briefing after that. So I'm going to play the role of pushing us along. We want to do a quick review of our four initiatives and the progress, and then we want to recommend to the group for your feedback and approval two new topics, which would be our work, the bulk of our work for the next year or so. So with that, let me have Scott or Steve directly dive into the update on IT. Steve?
Great. Good morning, everyone. Quickly, just to loop back on a project I know we talked a lot about in the last cycle with the advisory board, vendor management and investment review boards. I won't go into depth on our portfolio stat process and the work we did, but I thought what I would do is something I wasn't able to do last time, which is to bring you up to date on the results that we saw in the first round of this in 2012. As you know, portfolio stat and the investment review board work we did was really about face-to-face, in-person, evidence-based and data-driven meetings to work with agencies to really look at duplication, waste, et cetera, but also expand that scope into all the management areas and bring together the C-level executives at the agencies to really rationalize, you know, what's working, what's not working, where can we cut, where can we invest, and in a flat or declining budget environment, drive innovation and new work. And so on the results of this, if you have the slide deck, this is on slide number 4, We saw incredible results in 1 year with portfolio stat. We are projecting a budget impact of about $2.5 billion in savings just through the evidence we were able to gather and the work that we were able to do. Agencies committed to and identified almost 100 areas in which they are going to do real consolidation. They're going to bring systems together. They're going to look at contract renegotiations and other areas that equate to this $2.5 billion. A couple highlights, the Department of Agriculture plans to reduce their IT spending on infrastructure by 14% this year and 18% by FY15, totaling $172 million over these 3 years. And NASA also is a highlight where they've made arrangements to outsource a lot of the management of their IT systems. And this consolidation throughout the enterprise at NASA is going to equate to about $60 million by FY15. Just a couple highlights of many, and we are going to go publicly and announce more highlights as we roll through this in the course of the next year. The other thing to note is that Portfolio Stat didn't end at year one. This is going to be a yearly exercise that informs our budget work, and we're right now in the process of launching Portfolio Stat version 2. So stay tuned for that.
Any questions or comments just before we jump to the next set of slides?
And participants can press star 1 to ask a question.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, this was Ron Williams.
Oh, yes.
I just wanted to say it sounded like a substantial down payment and hopefully even more savings in the future.
Yeah, for sure. We anticipate this is the tip of the iceberg on this stuff. So.
And just to clarify, operator, and Scott, help me here, those who are asking questions or giving comments are those that are part of the board, correct?
Yes, those are the participants who are on the speaking side, correct, operator?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So they don't have to do star one. They can just speak, correct?
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Thank you. Let me keep us moving along. If you could take a look in your slide deck to page 5, just a quick review of the senior executive service, executive development, and appraisal work that was done across the course of 2011 on into 2012 and is ongoing at this point in time. First, John Berry, the administrator of the Office of Personnel Management, couldn't join us today, so I wanted to give you a very quick overview of all the work that's been ongoing in both of those areas. As you can see on the slide that we prepared for you, both the onboarding training, the seminars that were created in collaboration with the PMAB and OPM, responsibility for that has now been transferred to the Federal Executive Institute. And those sessions and seminars are ongoing. The next of those is actually going to take place on March 14th, and Ron will be joining us as the keynote speaker. Following quickly on the heels of that, on the 25th of April, we've got Gail McGovern, who will be joining us as the keynote speaker. And then at the back part of the year, we'll have two additional sessions, one of which is a brand new seminar that we'll be bringing forward on mission-driven business acumen. And we'll also be repeating one of the previous sessions that's gotten extremely high scores from all of the participants. So all in all, a very both solid and well-received onboarding exercise that we have engaged in and now hardwired into the federal government. The second initiative here around the senior executive service has been to standardize the appraisal system that's used across different agencies in order to both create consistency and clarity as to the performance of SES across agencies, and also to promote the movement of those folks across the federal government. That's going extremely well. Most of the agencies should be on board with the new appraisal system relatively shortly. Any questions or comments before we move to the next section?
I just wanted to, I just want to add my thanks here. Maybe it's a reflection of the times, the fiscal times, or maybe it's a reflection of my performance, but it's rare that I get positive comments from federal senior managers, and my positive comments unsolicited are disproportionately about the impact that all of you have had in these training sessions. And I just want to let you know how important it is that you have done what you've done to date, and we're counting on you going forward to do what Gail and Ron are doing, which is help lead these sessions. It has a big, big impact on our senior career managers, so thank you.
Excellent. Let me turn the microphone over to Danny Werfel, slide six.
Thanks, Scott. So on the improper payments project, through site visits and working with the PMAB members' teams, we got a lot of valuable information, learned more about sophisticated approaches that are out there for bringing data together to inform on issues of risk and error and fraud. We have two efforts underway that this information is being fueled into and that the PMAB members helped guide us on. One is at the state level, creating a center that is being run out of New York. Their states are combining their forces and their data to put information in a common place that can guide better decisions on unemployment insurance. That's more in the embryonic phase, but the information that's been provided is making its way into the strategic plans and the road mapping that is going to develop that solution. The other areas at the federal level, and we have the Treasury Department has what we call the Do Not Pay list and the Do Not Pay Center. That's more active. We have agencies on that site right now matching their data against the Do Not Pay information and finding areas of errors and preventing them. There's been real value in what was provided by the PMAB almost on a daily basis. I'm updated from the Treasury Department on how they are re-architecting the Do Not Pay solution to get more and more sophisticated and use data in different ways to catch errors. And again, there's, you know, our advancement and our sophistication in this area benefited greatly from our site visits and from our work with the team.
Danny, just give a minute on how we're doing overall on improper payments.
That's a good question. Our improper payment trajectory is going in the exact right direction. Our error rate has trended down each year since the president has took office. When the president took office, he set a pretty bold goal of directing our error rate downward precipitously enough to achieve $50 billion in error reduction. By the end of the first term, we actually achieved $47 billion based on our error rate reduction. So we came close. And we have more work to do, but you know we're taking a step back and looking at the error rate coming down each year, and $47 billion improvement is something that we are proud of.
Question for Danny. Feedback?
Yeah, just Danny, a question for you. We talked about a number of different things about how to have a tighter loop on when somebody goes back to work, and there were some initiatives we were trying to figure out if it was working with other government agencies or banks, so that when somebody goes from unemployed to employed, we could have better visibility into that and not potentially make improper payments. I don't know if you remember that conversation.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm actively involved in that. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
So I will say, you know, to give you an update on that, and just for the benefit of the larger group, you know, this is a good example of how you can get creative and you can partner with industry because, you know, as we don't have, for a variety of different reasons, the ability to access tax IRS records. So as people are filling out their W-2 forms and getting back into the workplace, that information is protected statutorily from being shared with agencies and with states. But what we do potentially have access to, as you mentioned, is bank and payroll data. And banks have a way of, based on the way someone's being, money is coming into account, to see if that's a direct deposit from an employer. And so we have a program underway partnering with financial institutions to feed information to states where we are seeing payroll provided or direct payment in that format, and that's giving us a signal that someone's back at work. And so that's part of kind of the creative way we're trying to think about how to triangulate the problem.
Exactly. That makes great. Great to hear you're still following that up. Because I think there's an opportunity there. That's great.
Thanks, Enrique. Let me take us to page 7 and quick run through the strategic sourcing work that's ongoing. Both Joe Jordan and Dan Tangerlini will probably be weighing in here. Joe?
Thanks, Scott. So I just wanted to thank everyone again for your guidance and direction on this effort. We've taken the core tenets of your recommendation and have instituted them in government-wide policy going forward. So we have ensured that every agency has the appropriate amount of skin in the game by designating a strategic sourcing accountable official. They've all done this. We also created a group called the Strategic Sourcing Leadership Council, which is comprised of the big seven spending agencies who collectively spend over 90% of the contracting dollars, and also the Small Business Administration to ensure continued entrepreneurship and diversity in our supply chain. And we're also partnering with GSA to identify the appropriate commodity areas that we can create government-wide vehicles and then mandate the utilization of them, as we heard loud and clear from your recommendation. This is all building on the effort to date, which has saved over $200 million with government-wide strategic sourcing vehicles, and we anticipate billions more in savings in fiscal 13 and 14. One other area that came through loud and clear as we did our site visits was the need to have visibility into the prices we pay for the same goods and services across agencies. So we are also partnering with GSA in the creation of a prices paid tool, which will populate with the data from vendors in these different categories. So we really appreciate that. I wanted to turn it over to Dan Tanglerini to talk through a few of the specific ways that we're partnered together in this effort.
Thanks a lot, Joe, and I appreciate the partnership of the PMAB and of Joe on making agencies really take a good hard look at this. In FY13, we're pushing forward on implementing five solutions, and we have interagency teams already stood up and kind of plugging away on moving those solutions forward. We're targeting a range of commonly purchased products across the government, from janitorial and sanitation supplies to software. And for each of these, we have hundreds, sometimes thousands, as Joe pointed out, contracts and prices that we pay across exact same products. So we need to really focus in on the data of what are the products we're buying, how much are we paying for them, and really drive it down to the low end of the range. We expect that all five solutions will be in place by the end of this fiscal year, and we hope to announce some in the next few months. Of course, we'll continue to update the group as we go forward.
Thanks, Dan. And just to reinforce as we wrap it up, I wanted to, again, articulate that collectively we have saved over $200 million with the unified vehicles. Agencies have saved several hundred million more dollars by applying these principles in their own agency-specific spending. And based on the initial analysis of the commodity areas Dan talked about, the fact that, as we discussed with you, we're moving up the value chain, we conservatively estimate that we'll save several billion dollars in fiscal 13 and several billion more in fiscal 14. Any questions or thoughts on strategic sourcing?
Great.
I think overall, the focus that all of you have brought and the ideas and the best practices have really turbocharged some of our existing efforts and created, like strategic sourcing, or created new areas of focus like the SES. So this has been an incredible two-year run from our perspective, and we would not be here without you. So we want to make sure that as we focus on setting up the next year, we continue to drive on these four priorities. So we will make sure that at each meeting we hold ourselves accountable to bringing to you additional results and incremental requests for feedback and counsel. At the same time, we're ready to take on a couple more topics. I think we've, from Scott's interviews with all of you, got feedback on what's worked well and what's worked less well, and we want to incorporate that into how we work together, how we run meetings, and also what topics we pick. So today is about running through some of the top line observations from the group, what's worked and what hasn't, and then pivoting pretty quickly so that we shop with you the two topics that we think are the right two topics for the next 12 months, but want to make sure that you're comfortable with those topics. So I think we're going to try to accomplish all of that in the next 15 minutes or so. Scott.
Fantastic. As Jeff mentioned, I did have the opportunity to spend some time with each of the members on the board, as well as with your counterparts here in the federal government, really to understand what has been most successful and most valuable about PMAB and where we could actually improve going forward. If you turn to page 9, I've just tried to encapsulate that really in two columns. Taking a look at some of the things that worked really well for PMAB across the last couple of years, I think this has come out in every recap conversation we've had both today and in previous meetings. The idea and best practice sharing on both strategic issues as well as kind of practical and tactical issues has been tremendously fantastic. Additionally, this group has been very, very important in terms of focusing work and effort inside the federal government. This has been a very good mechanism for ensuring that we bring to a close a lot of the work that's ongoing. And you can see some of the other areas where PMAB has been instrumental in making a difference in how the federal government moves against these large initiatives. A couple of areas where we could probably improve and probably increase the efficacy of this group. One, more interactions between PMAB members and their federal counterparts. So finding opportunities for informal conversation, socialization, and kind of idea sharing and mentoring, probably on a one-on-one or small group basis. A couple of comments around it would be nice if we could be a little sharper in terms of focusing on some of the challenges. I think one of the comments that that I heard as I was talking with folks, it seemed like we spent a lot of time sharpening the axe, not as much time chopping with the axe on some of the issues. A couple of other comments that you can see on the page. All of this is by way of saying that if you look at the first 2 years of the President's Management Advisory Board as essentially a large hypothesis testing exercise as to whether this group could be valuable in moving initiatives forward, I think we would definitely say that the result is yes, this has been an exceedingly valuable time and energy use for all of us. All of that having been said, we'd like to continue with the work focus that we've had with this group, and that's really what we'd like to spend the last 15 minutes talking about.
Hey, Scott. Before we go there, is there feedback from the federal issue owners,
yep.
Is there feedback from them on how we could be more effective in working with them?
You know, I've actually tried to incorporate that into what I put onto this page here.
Okay.
You got a couple of folks at the table. Steve, you got any thoughts on that from your own perspective or your peers?
I think definitely the one with where the interaction between PMAB and federal employees directly, I think, is a key one. Where we saw the most success, I think, was getting pretty directed feedback on specific areas to go tackle and sitting down with the people that are in the trenches inside these companies to hear about how they tackle those things every day. I mean, our chance to hear, you know, from the CIO of Adobe, for example, and how they do valuation models has now cascaded into the Department of Education first and now across multiple agencies in government, and that has been, sort of invaluable. So, we love to talk at the strategic level, but I think being able to dive in at the tactical level with folks has been invaluable.
Danny, anything to add?
I completely agree. My reflection was as we work going forward, understanding when the right handoff is to the technical folks on your team is critical so that we're, you know, kind of optimizing our time. I think some of the more valuable moments that we saw in the work that I did was when we got on the phone with your technical experts. And then one other thought is on site visits. You know, the site visit was probably the most valuable moment, and I know I've heard that from some of the other owners. The challenge we have is timing and budget constraints to do travel. So we might want to think about in the future how we do more remote site visits and virtual site visits. It's not as ideal, but it's something that potentially you can help us think about how we can see you in action, even if we're still sitting here in Washington, D.C.
Good.
Any other...
Sam, anything else on that front?
No.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Just keeping us moving along, we've kind of laid out the considerations or criteria for choosing topics for 2013. You can see what those are across page 10. Really four things which stood out both from the work we did across the last 2 years as well as the conversations. First, are the topics that we're going to be choosing areas or issues that will benefit directly from PMAB's involvement? Secondly, Is there real potential for significant improvement or savings in a relatively short time frame? Much as many of these initiatives are important, if they're going to take 5 or 10 years to really show up, that's probably not an appropriate area for us to be spending our time on. Third, and this kind of comes out from the conversations, are there dedicated owners for this issue inside the federal government for all of you to work with? So can we identify the individuals that we can task with moving this initiative forward from our side? And then fourth and finally, and probably most importantly, is there substantial overlap between the private and government sector in this particular topic or issue area? There are a number of issues that are government-specific, and they really don't lend themselves quite as well to PMAB involvement. That having been said, we've kind of chosen two topic areas that we'd like to frame for you. We're not going to take time now to go deep, discuss, and spend a lot of time talking about the various questions and issues we'd like to work on. We'll be doing that across the next 6 to 10 months. But what I'd like to do is to tee them up for you, and the first of those two topics is actually going to be hardwiring innovation into the federal government. And we have two individuals here that will kind of set the stage for you. The first of those is Todd Park. He's the Chief Technology Officer for the federal government, and obviously Steve Van Roekel, who you all are familiar with, the Chief Information Officer for the federal government. Let me turn it to page 11, and Steve.
Great, thank you. One of my favorite data points in the history of this country is that over 50% of the Fortune 500 companies founded in this country's history were founded in the worst economic times in our country's history. And I think if you trace those back, there's sort of two underlying elements of that. One was fiscal rigor and thinking about how do we drive cost savings and do things better, faster, and cheaper, and innovation. Many times there was technology, people, and other aspects that really drove a dynamic change into those industries and gave birth to some of the greatest American companies in our history. And hopefully, as you've noticed, Todd Park and I, among many others, have been driving a very aggressive innovation agenda for on behalf of the administration. And we think there's kind of two benefits to that. One is, you know, fostering a 21st century government, thinking about how do we close the productivity gap in our employees, how do we think about culture shift, how do we build things in a 21st century way that's going to get us those savings and get us the scale out and efficiency and lever up that you often see technology bring and innovation bring to the game. And the second is the incredible opportunity outside of government. This is one of those untapped things that, if done well, you know, releasing data, doing things in new ways, we can actually create jobs, we can foster the data economy, we can improve our cybersecurity stance and so much more. So innovation in government is really growing like never before, but we think there is lots of opportunity to work from private-public sectors to really scale this. The opportunity areas in this scope, we think, are a few things. One is people, you know, the center of everything. The opportunity there is really around just we've created a culture in government that doesn't incentivize, build incentives around innovation. We have a lot of cultural entropy where doing things the way you've always done them is rewarded, and massive risk aversion. You know, there's been big notable failures where things have happened in the past. We also have some statutory barriers. We have laws on the books that actually limit our ability to get customer feedback in some cases, where there's limits to being able to change an employee's work. Or there's laws that don't allow us to do financial incentives for good work, and so we want to think about that stuff, as well as the last area of organizational challenges. It's really hard to cross-pollinate ideas across government. You know, our shared services work and the strategic sourcing work and other things are highlights of that, but I think there still are areas of opportunity where we could really learn from the PMAB and think about that. To take the next step and talk a little bit about efforts we've had to promote innovation inside government and then some ideas about where we could collaborate, I'm going to hand it off to U.S. CTO Todd Park.
Thank you, Steve. Would you give 30 seconds on your background? I think it's the first time you've interacted with this team.
Sure, yes, sir. I'm the U.S. CTO, position that President Obama created as the one that I occupy. My background is actually I spent most of my life as a private sector entrepreneur. When I was 24, I co-founded a company called Athena Health that thought was going to deliver babies, ended up actually building the first web-based software for doctor's offices, and a pivot that I could talk about at great length another time. We took the company public 10 years later for north of $1 billion. It's now worth over $3 billion. I then actually retired to stay married. I moved to California with my wife, had a baby. So it was hard to stay retired, so I started two more companies, one called Castlight Health, which provides online healthcare shopping services, which the Wall Street Journal named the number one venture-backed company in America a couple years ago, and a company called HealthPoint Services in India that provides affordable telehealth, water, drugs, and diagnostics to rural villages, which, again, somewhat bizarrely, won the Sen Capital Award for the most innovative social innovation in India. And then I got an email from the United States federal government, and after a long, painful conversation with my wife, we moved to D.C., and I joined the Department of Health and Human Services as its first CTO, and then was asked by the president to become CTO of the U.S. government a year ago.
Great.
And what I will say is that the most amazing entrepreneurial experience I've ever had has actually been the last few years serving the president in the U.S. federal government. And we can talk more about that at a later time.
Great. Why don't you race to these next couple of slides?
All right. So while it's a challenging environment to promote innovation in the government, there's nothing that innovation likes better than a challenge. So there are fires that we've started that are beginning to burn quite brightly, and we'd love to actually dive more deeply into them with you and get your counsel on how to actually turn them into a conflagration of innovation. You can actually see the bullet points here. What I just want to kind of highlight are, for example, Steve and I launched with Jeff's support last summer something called the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program. We actually believe that at the end of the day, it's hard to innovate unless you actually have the right people. And while there are a lot of incredible innovators across government, we believe that there is enormous benefit to bring in extraordinary private sector innovators from the outside to team up with our best innovators to make amazing things happen. And so the Innovation Fellows Program was an experiment to see how that might work. We got 700 amazing applicants for 18 positions. They arrived in August. They teamed up with our best innovators in 5 game-changing projects, which within 6 months delivered spectacular results. We've now launched a second round of fellows, are soliciting applicants for that second class as we speak. If you go to whitehouse.gov/innovationfellows, you can actually learn more. 9 projects, about 36 fellows. But the punchline is if you bring amazing tech entrepreneurs and innovators from outside and join them with our best innovators inside, can they get amazing things done in 6 months? The answer is absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. And they're teaching us a lot about how to actually execute innovation in government, patterns of attack that we are in the process of replicating. One of those patterns of attack, actually, which I'll just touch upon, is fast cycle hypothesis testing, also known as lean startup. This is actually the methodology that really every decent private sector entrepreneur knows is the way you actually build a successful company with minimum pain, although there's always pain, as we know. But it's all about actually small, agile teams to begin, early engagement with your customers so you can unlearn by working with a customer the 80% of what you're assuming that's wrong, and then rapid iteration and prototyping as opposed to doing waterfall style year-long cycle time between product version type iteration. So that's something that the Innovation Fellows programs have all used to great effect. It's been used by other innovation products across government as well, and we're looking to clone that. You can see other examples here, but the point is that there's a lot of good stuff happening, but there is much, much more still to do. There are certain things that we know we should do, like we absolutely should scale up the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program and seed similar programs at the agency level. In fact, multiple agencies are already cloning or have cloned the Innovation Fellows Program to bring in more fellows for tours of duty. So that's one thing we know we should do.
Just to be clear, Todd's on slide 13.
I'm sorry, slide 13, potential activities to promote innovation. We also know, if you look at bullet point 5, that the patterns of attack that are being developed by that program for how you do things should be put into toolkits and then spread across the government. If you look at item number 6, one of the things we have actually discovered, and one of the things that I was actually very, very happy to learn early in my government career, is that it's not like government's actually devoid of innovators. There are innovators everywhere. But the problem is they don't have the innovator label and neon over their head. They're actually hard to find. And the number one thing that we've been asked by innovators we've talked to is help us find each other so we can share lessons learned, team up, and attack. So we are working on actually leveraging the next round of President Schmidt Fellows on a project to help network the innovators in government together and help create compound innovation action as a result. So there's a lot more to talk about here, but punchline is that we know there are innovators in government. We know that they're able to actually get miraculous things done in the corners in which they operate. We know that actually bringing in folks from the outside for in-depth tours of duty and teaming them up with those innovators that are already here generates spectacular results. We know that Lean Startup works in government. It works actually extremely well. But what we really want to do now is say, okay, what's next, right? How do we actually, in a very concrete, non-academic, super tangible, hard-hitting, high-performing way, get scale across government in a way that lowers the cost of government and improves the outcomes we're delivering to the American people? This is a problem. This is a challenge and opportunity that I am sure that everyone on the PMAB has grappled with before. So we would be desperately excited to network with you and your teams on this challenge. Like, how are you spreading innovation? How are you measuring it? How are you actually spreading it as a cultural value? How are you incenting it? How are you encouraging it? How are you actually creating conflagrations of innovation to deliver greater value to your shareholders? Because that's what we want to do for the American
And how do we work with you to create the right programs to bring talent into the private sector?
That's right. So in addition to actually teaching us lessons we can apply, we'd actually love to just fuse with you.
and potentially in a non-conflicted way, we can take government employees out to the private sector to learn as well.
That's right. So actually, so first of all, just to give you an indication, agencies across the board are incredibly interested in bringing folks like your innovators in the government. The last round of innovation fellows, we had 35 fully funded projects. People wanted to bring like 150 fellows, and we had to have them compete to select 9 projects and 36 fellows. But agencies are also extremely interested in sending their people into your organizations, not for like a day or for like a webinar, right, but to sit down and work side by side with your folks so they can understand how do you do best practice XYZ, so they can then bring that back to government.
So to be clear, we're not asking you to write to commit your own resources to this on an ongoing basis. This is advisory to us.
That's right.
As we scale innovation, we figure out how to work even more closely with the private sector. I'll put my bias on the table, which I think this is a big, big opportunity for the federal government and for PMAB, in that we would be hardwiring in something that would not only last for a long time, but scale in a way that I think would be very powerful. So I bring a big bias to this, that this is a great topic given its potential ROI, but let us open it up to the PMAB members to see to get any feedback or answer any questions.
Hey, Jeff. It's Liz. Continuous innovation is the bread and butter, and I agree with everything you said. The one thing that I don't see represented on this list, which I think is probably part of it, is that I think that there are limits to the thought of innovation gurus and center of excellence around that. If it's done just exclusively, I guess I'd like to know the thoughts on, the notion of how do you change the culture so that everyone thinks that innovation is their job, not a select group of outside fellows or inside fellows. That's important. You need to have centers of expertise and innovation, but when you really have the transformational change is when you have a cultural shift and everybody, no matter what their position is, views innovation as part of their job. I think you need a change management culture component in addition to these infusions and best practices. That's just my experience.
I think it's absolutely spot on, and we're running experiments along those lines as well. Like, for example, the HHS Innovates Contest, which is an open challenge run every 6 months where the Secretary celebrates the best innovations that have happened in the agency. It's got huge participation from across the employee base. It's actually been a real culture changer by indicating that leadership actually values innovation, and it's a career advancer to take a risk and actually innovate. So we couldn't agree with you more, and we would love to learn more about how you and others have done that in your organizations, because that's a sine qua non. We've got to do that, no question.
It's a good point, Liz. Others?
Jeff, two things. This is Shantanu. The first is I'm really glad to see you have innovation on the agenda. I think it makes all the sense. What we found is that the person who you have leading the innovation effort In most organizations, you know, when the antibodies come out or everybody comes in to say no, helping have a program where these leaders can understand what to expect as they're trying to drive innovation within the organization, we found that that's actually helped them deal with things that we have learned along the way of what prevents innovation from happening. So maybe, you know, having those people have access to people who've been through this before might be something we think about.
Absolutely. In fact, the Government Innovators Network is meant to do exactly that.
Yeah. And we found that, you know, giving people permission to innovate is step number one.
Absolutely.
Because there are people just hungering, craving to do this.
That's absolutely right.
And learning from that would be great.
In fact, one cultural impact that the Innovation Fellows projects are already having is they're doing things like publishing all their code openly on GitHub. They're doing things like going out and engaging with customers early. And there are people in government saying, are we allowed to do that? The answer is absolutely yes, right? And so they're using that as case law, these other innovators, to then go do those things.
Yeah.
So it then becomes an innovation virus that spreads.
Yep. Any other comments?
All right. I would just say that that I think it would be important to communicate early on what we view as innovation. So I think it's probably obvious to everybody on this call that innovation can really take any form, but it's not always obvious to employees of a company or, I imagine, employees of the federal government. So, you know, it can be about a better customer experience, whether that's somebody internal to the government or an American citizen using government services. And those tend to get maybe a little bit more visibility than something that can be an improvement to a cost structure, or it could be a business model change or a different way of doing business. And I think it will be important early on to just make sure that everybody's clear on what forms innovation can take, and that all forms are obviously good.
Yeah, just to add to that, this is Gail. I also think that you'd be well advised to say, here are five or six things we need to get done, and we need to do them by being more innovative, as opposed to telling everybody, be innovative. Because I think what will happen then is you'll have 1,000 flowers blooming, and it's going to be hard to tell if you move the needle in any way. Because at the end of the day, harnessing innovation is to accomplish more, spend less, be more efficient, be more effective, improve customer satisfaction, what have you. And I think if you just said these are three brand new initiatives and we're going to tackle them in a different way, you'll have better learning than just tell everybody try to do their own thing.
Yeah, we've definitely learned that. We had a kind of an early attitude that was, if we build it, they will come. And what we learned was we had to go and solve real problems and build platforms.
Yeah, absolutely.
And opportunity based on solving real things. So we couldn't agree more.
That's absolutely right. And I think the PMAB has already demonstrated its appetite for and its value this conversation. So
it's awesome.
Terrific.
It's great.
And I think just taking a look at the criteria we've laid out, we're clearly in the realm of this is a great topic for PMAB. And across the next few months, we'd like to dive deep into each of the things that you have raised, as well as things that I know are in the heads of other folks who haven't had an opportunity to talk.
So let me do this. I'm failing at my role as timekeeper, that we're already a few minutes over. Quarter of. Dan Taglerini, can you give the group a sort of elevator pitch on why real estate is a great area for focus and the opportunity there? And then what we'll do is we'll let people absorb that, and then Scott will follow up by
exactly.
Email and phone to get any further feedback. But again, we bring high confidence that this is a good area. Dan, why don't you do your elevator pitch?
No, great. Absolutely. This is a classic issue related to the scale of the federal government, its responsibilities. I mean, it's almost the result of the nearly geological layering of asset investments over nearly 200 years. We have 1.1 million separate assets, about 20,000 buildings, 495 million square feet. We have about 24 major overseeing departments. There's no common real estate management system. The systems we have focus on reporting rather than management, and we spend a huge amount of money on this area, about $33 billion overall, $9 billion in rent, and we have a giant what we call like retail infrastructure, 19,000 500 field offices. On the first slide, we have an example of one agency, which just has over 2,000 offices nationwide. So we've had some progress already made. USDA has closed over 250 real field offices. But and we're also making progress on doing things like streamlining the federal real estate sales process, restricting agency portfolio growth, increasing adoption of flexible workforce management practices, and improving the real estate portfolio planning process. What would be great to hear is from the private sector, you know, how do you approach these issues? What are the techniques you use? How do you find savings in this area, and how do you use it to contribute to better outcomes?
Excellent. So why don't we, just in the interest of time, Scott, why don't you spend 30 seconds on next steps on slide 19?
Sure. If you could all just move forward in your slide deck. Going forward from this call, I'll reach out to each of you individually, take any comments or feedback on the two topics that we've just laid out. You can see how we plan to spend our time across the next few months. That will be in exploring each of these two topics, going deep on particular areas where we can engage you to help us move some specific projects forward. We plan to have a meeting, which will be taking place sometime in the spring, the date to be determined. And obviously one of the points of feedback from you all is to make sure to give you enough lead time so that you can actually make it here to Washington for the in-person
meeting. Why don't we lay out the calendar for the rest of the year?
Yeah. And the expectation is that across 2013, we will do as we have done in previous years and finish up the end of the year with a meeting where we will be talking about initiatives that are already up and running against each of these two topic and issue areas. With that, let me bring our call to a close. As I mentioned to all of you in a couple of emails I've sent through, we are going to be having an administrative call, which will take place immediately following this. You all have the dial-in information, so if you wouldn't mind, we will close this meeting now, and we will join you in just about 60 seconds on a separate conference call.
And that'll just be a 15-minute run or so. So we'll look forward to everybody from the PMAB joining that administrative briefing in 1 minute for about 15 minutes or so. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.